geeks and cinemaniacs. From the heart of Hollyweird, California, at the epicenter of all things eerie and awesome, it's time for Charles Band's Full Moon Freak Show.
This week, I'm excited to welcome one of my oldest friends and collaborators, a director, screenwriter, editor, and producer who has been part of the Full Moon family for over 40 years. Ted Nicolau got his start in cinema as a sound recordist on one of the most iconic horror films of all time, 1974's The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. From there, he joined forces with me, working as an editor on the 1979 classic Tourist Trap, and later on 1985's Ghoulies, and even later as the director of 1986's utterly insane Terror Vision. In 1991, he helmed the first entry in the subspecies franchise, the vampire film series that would define much of his career, and whose fifth entry he just wrapped in Serbia a few weeks ago. He's one of the great genre directors and one hell of a dude, and we're honored to have him on The Freak Show. Welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me, Charlie.
Boy, oh boy, what a roll-up of 40-odd years of schmutz.
Boy, it really rolls out into a lot
it
of
does.
Movies, too.
And 40, you know, I said 40-plus years, but the truth is, you came on board for Tourist Trap in 1977?
78. I came 78. To L.A. in 77.
So that's actually 44 years. Let's just say 40.
Yeah, let's say around 40 years. Yeah.
You know, in Hollywood, you can always add a few years or take them away, depending on who you're trying to impress. So in this case, 40 years, something like that. So, you know, these things, we're just going to free flow, do whatever feels like what we want to be talking about. But how did this begin? How did we actually meet? Because I don't remember that.
I was came to Los Angeles in 1977 and went to work on a movie called Roar. Okay. And the editor who hired me was Larry Carroll.
Oh, okay.
Larry Carroll, after Roar got hit by the flood and we had to stop editing for a while, Larry Carroll moved on with David Schmoller, who was a film school buddy of mine, to work on Tourist Trap for you.
Okay.
And they hired me away from Roar to come work on Tourist Trap.
Okay.
And we met. You would come to the cutting room a few times, but you were mostly in your office trying to figure out how to
survive,
get the money to finish the every
well,
movie
mind,
that you were
okay,
making.
So 77?
78.
78. So, you know, I'm like 26, 27. We're kids, right?
Yeah.
And I'm
like,
hey, Ted, how's it going? And yeah, money was terrible. So then what happened?
Yeah. And so so I edited that film. And then you liked the work I did on that film. And you had a movie called The Daytime Ended that was kind of in trouble when the director and editor left.
Yes.
And so you brought me back to try to fix that film editorially.
Right.
And from there, our relationship kind of grew and grew. And then when you were directing movies, you'd bring me on to edit those films, too.
Amazing, amazing. There's so many stories. And, you know, what's funny for you guys is Ted and I Ted's one of my closest friends for literally that many years. And we have all sorts of shtick we do. A lot of it I can't say on camera. I just can't. But my youngest son, Zalman, says, what you should do for the first time doing a freak show is, even though it's 11:30 in the morning, you should break out a vodka martini, because we do enjoy a vodka martini together.
Yes, we do. Every time we get together, there's more than one vodka martini involved.
Yep.
Okay, Zalman, bring them in.
No. Yeah, the bummer is I figured it was tempting, but, you know, there's a whole day ahead of us. We got to function. Otherwise, I need a nap.
Yeah, and I have to go home and edit subspecies.
Oh, Blood Rise. Okay, we're jumping forward 40 years. All right, so we go back to the 70s. Those were kind of cool days. I mean, there was a lot of struggle. We had these offices on Santa Monica Boulevard. I always remember you editing some movie. I guess you kept going, because I know Daytime Ended was a disaster for me. I almost went out of business. Worst thing a young producer can do is send a bunch of people, including a Directors Guild director, to the middle of nowhere, where everyone's put up, you know, at hotels and shit, and ran out of money. That was a really bad situation. Plus, when it was finished, unlike most movies, it needed a lot of stop motion animation. So it's not like you finish the movie, you put it together, and you deliver it, and you get money. You have to then spend months doing the stop motion. So that movie is one of probably my worst movie experience, other than your obvious awesome editing.
Yeah, you know what? That was funny, because I remember even myself and my friend Courtney Gooden shot some star field for the film. I mean, it was really like everybody pitching in to try to finish that movie as terrible. Best as it could be.
Terrible. And then we had a moment a little later on. I made a movie called Dungeon Master, and there were a bunch of sort of talented people in the fold at that time, and everyone got a shot directing a segment of Dungeon Master with Richard Mull. I directed the interstitial, whatever it is, the bookend material. And what was the one you directed?
Basically, let's back up.
Uh-oh.
Because I was the editor of the thing, and you had all these other directors Uh-oh. Directing little segments. And
oh, and you said, Charlie, you know,
I was
the
like,
fuck?
Charlie, what the fuck's going on here?
Right.
I could do one of these. And when the film ended up being a little bit short, because I edited it so tightly to make it a little bit short.
It was a plot.
You gave me a shot to direct
that
little piece. Yeah.
Luckily, your memory's good. It's kind of a blur. There are moments I can pluck out. I do remember walking down the hallway in Santa Monica Boulevard and there you are with your amazing assistant, Becky, and she's like helping you in the bins. This is way before, you guys don't know, bins and film and cuts and editing and splices and tape, and it's all heavy lifting stuff. So it was a blur. But what I don't even remember what segment you shot or you directed for Dungeon Master.
Directed that desert chase that was sort of like the futuristic set in an airplane graveyard
a little. Kind of. I think it may have been the least memorable. No, I'm just kidding.
Thanks
no,
so I mean, much.
No, you did such an amazing job. You did. I mean, let's face it, of all the directors who were involved in that project, some went on to do some other stuff. But here we are. You just finished 44 years later shooting Subspecies 5. Your work was really good, but it was a few years later, right, that we did in Italy, TerraVision?
TerraVision, yeah. So what was that? Maybe 84 or something was Dungeon Master or something like that. And after Dungeon Master, I think I edited Trancers for you, maybe.
Oh, okay. Ghoulies?
Ghoulies.
All Trancers. The classics,
so many movies. And even, when did Stuart do? No. So
that
so
was Reanimator.
Reanimator, right. No, my friend Lee Percy edited
right.
Reanimator.
Right.
But then at a certain point, you moved offices to La Brea.
Mm-hmm.
And there I was editing also many movies. And finally, you called me into your office one day and said, hey, we've got this
Ted.
Some movies. I've got some posters here. And let me just show you some posters and see if there's one of these that you'd like to direct.
What a bizarre way to make movies. It's worked for 50 lot of years.
It did work pretty well.
I tell people all the time, you need to have a title and a piece of art that's compelling. We don't have stars. We don't have a theatrical release. So you need something that people go, whoa, that's really cool. And then, of course, you need to make a good movie. So you chose?
I chose TerraVision, but I said to you, you know what? I'd love to do this movie, but could we do it as a comedy? And
I said, no fucking way.
No, you were so good. Even though you weren't known for making comedies at that point, you said okay to it. And
maybe
for better or worse, yes, you know, yes. We might have really fucked up in that choice. But we made a movie that has stood the test of time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've made a number of movies that are, I call them black comedies. They're still got horror stuff. They're still edgy. They're still boobies and blood. And, you know, I mean, Head of the Family movie I made a few years later is sort of in that in that subgenre. But TerraVision really is on the absolute edge of being a comedy. I mean, there's some really funny shit in there. And I love it. People love that movie. It's test of time beyond the test of time. You know, a movie that can still be fun to watch 40 years later is kind of rare, you know?
It's timeless in that way. And it continues to gain new fans among kind of the hipsters and young people.
Yeah,
I always imagined that someday somebody was going to understand that movie, and it would be appreciated finally. And it took 10 or 15 years after it was
like
released
a fine
for people to
wine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But tell people watching this a little bit of the experience of making that movie in Italy in the 80s. So again, for some of you who are not aware of this whole timeline, there was a brief period of time where Empire purchased. The ex Dino De Laurentiis Studios, which is outside of Rome. And this was a 100-acre, 5-soundstage studio that had sat follow for many, many years because Dino sort of left the country. But that's the same place where they shot The Bible and Barbarella. This was a big operation. And we were cleaning it up. It was like a fixer-upper studio. And for just a few short years, we were kings of the castle there.
That was an incredible experience. And at the time, I didn't realize how magical it was. I thought the rest of my life would be like that. And it turned out not quite so magical. But there was, like you say, the fixer-upper studio where the offices were kind of tumbled down, and Dino's office was right. kind of just a wreckage
but
of
I was
the
in,
old
I
office.
Got to be in Dino's office. Remember, was my office.
Yeah, yeah.
It was gutted of every strip of furniture. There was, I guess, a spare desk. And, you know, Dino was not a large man. So he always had a platform that he would stand on when he would stand up. And the chairs, I didn't have his original chairs, were actually cut a little lower. So when people came into his office, he seemed really big. But I remember the office being gargantuan. Just
it was
humongous.
Big, yeah, yeah.
I mean, his particular office.
And it had that, like, individual elevator up to the office.
Yep.
There was a little bar there where you could get your espressos and your ice cream. The sound stages were empty shells, but had the grid, and you could actually make movies in it. The crew was incredible. Giovanni Natalucci, the production designer, was a mad genius. Romano Albani was an incredible director of photography. And the setup was such that in Italy you work six days a week, but on Saturday you quit about 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
So it was like the ideal kind of lifestyle. We were staying at a hotel in a little beach town called Torvianica near the studio. Little beachside hotel, very tiny, beautiful place with a great
chauffeured
restaurant.
Chauffeured back and forth.
We had cars. We rented cars.
Oh my God.
Those were the days of like relatively good budgets.
Right.
We had an incredible cast with Garrett Graham and Mary Warrenoff and John Grise and Diane Franklin. And so making that
Sonny
movie. Sonny Carl Davis, who was gone on to become like your good luck charm of many movies. And it was just a magical experience. The monster, John Buechler's monster, and his team of people were like incredible. It was really
great. I've talked a little bit about this, and you know, people can always read my book, which people say more about your book, which is called Confessions of a Puppet Master, because there's a lot in there about our early days and about the studio in Italy, and later on about starting our business in Romania and subspecies. So we'll cover some of this. But for those of you who are not totally familiar, for those few years, you know, money was sort of good because we had a really good deal with Vestron Videos, so there were advances that were decent enough to make, you know, shows with more meat on their bones. And through sort of good luck and perseverance and God knows what, suddenly us, our little group of weirdo, still relatively young filmmakers, had this 100-acre historic frickin' studio. And it was a fixer-upper. We had to clean shit up, but, you know, I wish I could go back, as I was just busy frickin' keeping the place alive and making sure the bank was happy. But there were really moments where I was sitting in Dino's office, you were shooting Terrorvision, Stuart Gordon was shooting whatever it was, From Beyond, Schmuller was doing Crawl Space with Klaus Kinski, you know, and or Buechler was there with Troll. And I sat there thinking, this is fucking awesome. This is going to be great. And then, of course, the bank called and, you know.
Oh, we all thought that was like that. The rest of our lives were like taking off in a great trajectory.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, for a moment.
And you could explore the backlots, too, and find old spaceships from Barbarella kind of rusting in the weeds. It was a real magical place.
So tell people a little bit about we know about a little bit about Terrorvision, but we collectively had this amazing art director. This is today, if we were to shoot Terrorvision on our budget, and let's say we just somehow managed to squeeze out enough money to give you the same amount of shooting days, which is what we can't usually afford, not in a million years could we build that set on a soundstage in Los Angeles. So tell people a little bit about how this worked, because this is like from concept to sketches to building.
No, so you flew Giovanni Natalucci to Los Angeles to meet.
Bring in Giovanni.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
to meet and talk about what the movie was going to look like. The script was the script, and it was kind of just as wild and comedic as the movie turned out to be. But we spent days going through location folders, looking at houses, talking about the San Fernando Valley and swingers pads and porn movie sets. And he took it all in his mind, went back to Italy, and started designing the house that was going to be the Puttermans' pleasure palace.
To be built on one of those sound stages.
On the sound stage. And it was supposed to have a jacuzzi that was like a Roman bath jacuzzi. And it never in a million years did I imagine that it was going to be what it was. The day I arrived in Italy and he ushered me onto the sound stage and I saw the walls painted in that kind of terracotta Italian style, the erotic art on the walls, the split-level dining room, and the most amazing thing of all, the jacuzzi that was like a full swimming pool size
a
Roman
bath.
Working jacuzzi, ice freaking cold water that that the actors had to get into, but the most incredibly crazy set that I've ever seen was like the screenplay and everything I imagined in the screenplay taken to the nth degree.
Right.
And everybody in that movie kind of did the same thing and took everything to the nth degree.
You know, what we experienced for those few short years was, you know, sort of what Hollywood was like for lucky filmmakers in the 30s and 40s. I mean, most movies were shot on sound stages. You know, you didn't go on location. And to be able to envision something, work with an art director, and then someone pay to build these fucking sets. Because I remember, I was there, I saw it, I thought, this is a crazy looking set. But I would get all the notes from production going, okay, this is going to cost this. I'm thinking, can we just spend like $200,000 just building this fucking thing? But, you know, everything was just a blur of madness. I figured, sure, that this, and we're going to build that, and we're going to build the old house, and suddenly we're just, you know, we spent millions of dollars over those few years just building sets, which then got torn down. You know, I mean, the whole concept now is like, we couldn't do that today. You know, I mean, even if money was free in a way, you would never be able to recover those kind of dollars unless you have a big deal with Netflix and they're going to give you 10 or 20. I mean, look at, what the hell is it? The new Game of Thrones, you know, House of the Dragon. They spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars building all that stuff. But this is stuff that gets torn down then. So I was also bummed out sometimes. We would always try to think, how can we reuse the set before things got fucked up? And we did that a few times. We did reuse some sets, but we never reused Terravision set because it was unreusable.
Yeah, only if you were going to shoot like a Roman epic or something like that.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
No, but it's funny because I guess the money that you spend on the set, though, comes back to you in the fact that you just walk onto the set every morning, turn on the lights, and continue shooting.
You don't
have to set up a bunch of lights, travel.
It's a great business if you're Spielberg. We somehow, for a brief period of time, we were these amazing spoiled filmmakers in fucking Rome, Italy. Rome was affordable, aside from the fact that we had money. So you guys were getting like good per diem, and you stayed at a beautiful hotel, right? It was all that.
It was incredible. I mean, it was a funky, beautiful beachside hotel. So it was really a great place. And we had, our per diems were so good that we could go into Rome on Saturday afternoon and get cranked up on espressos and spend our money on fashions that you could never wear once you came back to the United States.
Which was also cool because many-ish of you, like Stuart, yourself, brought your families over. So it wasn't just, you know, you there suffering alone. You had your wife, your kids. Stuart brought his family over there.
Yeah.
It was that kind of a
spending our per diem.
Yes,
like
per
crazy.
Diem.
But you know what? Talk about reusing sets. There was one set that you had for, what was that? Arena, the outer space set?
That was the beginning, the end of Empire, by the way. Those expensive movies.
That was expensive. But you had those sets. Mm-hmm. And you had a couple of titles, and I chose one title called Space Sluts and the Slammer to reuse the sets from Arena to repurpose them for the movie, just at the time when, like you say, everything kind of fell apart. And that screenplay was the one screenplay, because I was over there prepping the movie when I got the call that, well, we had to pull the plug on everything.
Right.
I guess I left without even bringing the screenplay home with me.
So I have to jump into this right
yes,
now.
This before is you... why I'm getting there.
So Ted and I, we get together all the time, and every so often, because he can whine really good, he bemoans the fact that he lost one of the great scripts of all time, Space Sluts in the Slammer, also known as Space Cadets. Because one of the things we would do is to not freak agents out, you know, when you want to get a good client, you got to kind of disguise what you really want to call the movie, Space Sluts in the Slammer. Even today, it's probably not a great title, even though I think it's hilarious. So the script was called, or had the title, Space Cadets. Now, this is not a fake put on thing just for your entertainment people. Literally yesterday, we've been going for weeks through storage facilities, because there's a lot of things that have been buried and lost, and plus we're spending stupid money every month storing tons of shit. So we're going through this, and we're going through lots of files, and I told Zalman, I said, look, any file that has a lot of old paperwork, any script, pull the script out. And sure enough, and I have it right here. Here it is. Space Cadet, also known. Look, it's yellow with age.
Yellow with age.
Also known as Space Sluts in the Slammer.
Typed on a real typewriter, which is why I could never find a copy of it. How many pages? It's so thick.
Way over.
114 pages.
Today, our scripts are 60 pages, and that's it.
And let me tell you, this was a funny. Oh. This was a funny movie, and I can't wait to read it again, because I have torn my house inside out looking for a copy of this script. I have story sketches, designs from Giovanni Natalucci, and now we have the screenplay.
Yes. And you should know, this will never get made, okay? Never. It's not going to happen.
Why?
Well, unless you find a way to shoot it down the street here and, you know, make it affordable,
this is going to get made.
You were going to take.
This is going to get made, okay. Charlie.
All right. Space Sluts in the Slammer.
Subspecies 6 comes as a package deal with Space Cadets.
We'll figure that out. But this is a true story, and it's amazing we found this after how many years?
Oh, when you sent me that photo.
You know what the date is on that script?
1987.
Yeah. 1987.
And this was truly, I think it's really funny screenplay.
Okay.
It was like a sex farce in outer space.
You read it first, see if you still feel the same. Then I will read it.
Okay.
And then we'll
see
about how we make this maybe one day if we win the lottery or something good happens.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Okay, now we're still in the frickin' 80s, late 80s now, okay? And, you know, we're making movies. I lost Empire. Life happens. And, you know, I made Trancers and Trancers 2 and Trancers 3. And, we were cooking for a while. But mainly because of Italy and the fact that our investment was there and the dollar was strong. That's why your per diem lasted so much, so long, and so much value. But then within a few years, towards the end of our little reign in Italy, it flipped the other way. The dollar got really weak. So we were spending way more money shooting in Italy than we could shoot the same movies here. I mean, yes, any excuse to go shoot a movie in Italy is a good one, so I'm fine with that. But not if you're going, wait a minute, we can make this movie here much less expensively and not ship people across the world. I know it was a bummer. The per diem days, the Crescenti Mare days were over.
It was the best way to make a movie.
I can imagine. Then we came back, and things were fucked up for a while. And then I invented this idea to do a Full Moon, because Empire was sort of gone. And the first movie was Puppet Master. Did you edit that? No.
Yes, no, I didn't edit Puppet Master,
okay.
No.
But luckily that kind of blew up. It was Full Moon's first movie, and I made this amazing deal with Paramount. They were great. This was all direct-to-video days, VHS still. This is before DVDs. And literally in the very beginning of those first early Full Moon movies, I thought, we've got to make a great vampire movie. And you and I talked about it, and the reason why this happened, and I'm going to let you tell the story, but I'm giving them the setup, is we were going to the American film market, we were pre-selling our movies, and some fellow came in from Romania and explained that there's a great opportunity, that there's a studio there, and they could supply all the below-the-line costs, all the hard costs. We just have to, you know, send our talent over and do post-production. And in return, he wanted whatever, some Eastern Bloc countries. I thought, this sounds really good. So immediately, the few people around me who were a little more conservative said, wait a minute. They just had a revolution, okay, like 3 months ago. The State Department, whatever, saying don't fucking go to Romania. You know, it's not a good place to go. But to me, it sounded great. Plus, I knew a little of the history. Bucharest, which is where we went, used to be known as the Little Paris. So it had beautiful architecture. Romanian is a Romance language. I speak Italian. I thought, this is fucking fantastic. So you and I talked about it, and we came up with the idea. I came up with the idea of a movie called Subspecies. Again, it started with a piece of art that I had. And you take it from there.
So, started with a piece of art that Charlie had, Subspecies. Woman being carted off by a bunch of little subspecies characters. And I had never been a vampire lover. Mm-hmm. I was a Frankenstein kid growing up. But the idea of going someplace unique to do a movie, a vampire movie, the more I thought about vampires, the more interesting they became. The more I looked at the subspecies, I was like, Charlie, let's do it without the subspecies.
Okay, right. That you're forcing me to jump into this story.
Okay.
So this is not the first time Ted or other directors have come to me after loving the concept art, the poster that I knew would make this movie successful, and say, and this is not a joke, you came to me with a very serious face and tried to convince me. Now, the poster, I'm sure all of you know what it looks like, but for those who don't, and I'll describe it since a lot of people are listening to this on audio, there was this half-naked chick being literally carried through a real creepy-looking graveyard by these little diminutive characters that are maybe 8 inches tall. And the movie's fucking called Subspecies. So Ted comes to me one day as we're getting prepping to do this, and he basically tries to convince me we don't need the subspecies. And I said, Ted, then you're gonna, no matter how good it is, you're going to basically make a vampire movie. And Subspecies is awesome. And we got – anyway, I'll let you tell more of the story because it's actually funny how the subspecies started.
So I said, okay, yeah, I'll do it. But we decided to go over there to send me over there to do a location scout. So this is the summer of 89.
No, it's not 89. Yeah. It was like 90 or 91. It was not 80. No.
It was 80.
No, it's not. No,
it was 90.
90.
90. Yeah, yeah. Because 89 was the revolution, December of 89. Right. Okay, so it's 1990. Summer of 1990, 6 months after the revolution, nobody told me that the State Department was saying, you guys kind of kept that from me, State Department advisories. So I went over to Romania, stayed with this guy, Jan Ionescu, in an old villa on Lake Snagov that used to belong to the Securitate, the security police. And he introduced me to Vlad Paunescu and Oana Tofan at the time, who's now Oana Paunescu, who was Vlad was going to be the director of photography, Oana the costume designer, to Columbo, the crazy-ass driver who was going to drive us all over Romania in a Mercedes, to scout locations. So we scouted these locations, and the castles and the churches and the monasteries and the mountains and all of the places that we could shoot blew me away. And in spite of the fact that everything seemed sinister and strange to me in Romania, everything was gray and you couldn't find food to eat or a chicken that was properly cooked. And you couldn't.
You mean the Biafra chickens?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not just cooking, there was no meat on their bones.
Right. They were roadkill chickens, undercooked to the perfect rare, juicy red. Everything about it said, this is going to be a horrible experience, except for the fact that Vlad is a good director of photography, Juan is a genius costume designer, and the locations were spectacular. So I came back after a week, and one of the Romanian producers said, we'll never see you again. You'll never come back to this country. I came back and said, Charlie, let's do it. This could be really, really cool.
Right.
And to your credit, you went, okay, let's go for it. And so we started casting, and we cast for a long time looking for Radu, the vampire. And we cast for so long that I had to go off to Romania, and we still had not cast the vampire until Michael Watson came in as Stefan and recommended to you Amos Hove.
So on my side of the fence, you know, the – what was attractive, other than everything you just mentioned, was that the cost, because they were picking up essentially below the line cost, was affordable, you know. And I don't remember the exact shooting days we planned, but knowing that it's a Ted Nikola film, it was probably originally 18 days.
It was 35 days. 30.
That was what the plan was.
I guess the plan was probably 4 weeks. You were a little more liberal on the days. Yes.
There was money. It's not liberal. You know, oh, my God. Anyway, so this thing is taking shape and form. I'm in Italy back and forth for reasons I forget the exact timeline, but it just sounded perfect. And then I eventually got on a plane and, you know, checked it out, loved it. But again,
do you remember that meeting when you showed up for the very first time?
Yes,
in
yes.
the villa?
Mm-hmm.
Tumblers of vodka.
Yeah.
Columbo had procured three prostitutes just in case. And the prostitutes were just sitting like Romanian prostitutes. You don't remember? Yeah, because we ignored them. We were talking business
we were
and talking art.
Like ugly looking. If anything else, they were scary chicks.
They sat there the whole time like, what are these guys? Doesn't anybody want us? And so we had our whole meeting and then came away like, okay, we have a deal, right?
So embellishing a little bit, I figured being, you know, close to Italy in Europe, I thought, okay, we're going to have a reasonably good meal. I got to go back to the food because we met at that place. I think it's the place we're both talking about it was a beautiful room. There was endless amount of silverware and cutlery and plates and glass. I thought, fuck, this is going to be a feast. Then they brought some really scrawny looking like salad or vegetables. I thought, well, this doesn't look very good. No bread. The wine was good. And
cheap.
I think I literally think that the wine was called Murfatlar, if I remember correctly, because somehow that name, it was actually good wine, but when you look at it as an American, it's Murfatlar. And fart was in there somewhere. So I thought, well, okay. Murfatlar. We're having the wine. And then finally the main course came. I already said it, but I have to describe it. They brought – again, there was no food there. I mean, this was the – right after revolution, people were starving. The Ceausescu, they killed him and the wife, but they sucked every dollar out of that country. But there were still places left that looked beautiful, but there was no food. So the main course came on big platters. You would think a pig would come on, but it was literally – I call it Biafra chicken. These are the scrawniest chickens that you have to eat. Like, it was like – anyway, a lot of Murfatlar, so we felt good. We did the thing. And the whole setup seemed great. I thought Vlad and Juana were charming, even though years later I would feel differently. But it began really nice. And I basically, you know, recently, you probably know this. Well, you do know this. Adam Felber was my biographer, and I've told him all these stories. And when it came to Romania, he dubbed you Agent Nicolau. Because you're the one we sent first to make sure, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. See if there's any landmines out there in the
exactly.
field.
You might open this box that just came in from FedEx. So you went there first. You cleared everything. Agent Nicolau did a good job. And then I went. And then you started shooting this movie. And without boring people too much, because we're one day going to put together an incredible documentary about making subspecies, all the subspecies movies. But I've got to go back to that part of this whole story. So I leave you, obviously I convince you that you got to fucking put subspecies in a movie called Subspecies, and you said, okay, and we left, and you had the rule. I mean, they were so anxious to please. You got anything you wanted. I'll take a piece of downtown. I'll do this, that castle. Stuff was also existed at the built sets on
Bufta Studios. There was a castle interior.
Everything. So, and this is one of my favorite parts of the Romanian story. So in Subspecies, the original, there are the scenes that are scripted for the subspecies to do things. They open a thing, they grab the bloodstone or whatever it is. There's stuff that these subspecies have to do. And the idea that, I'm not sure if it was your idea or production, they said, what we do is you need to build full body costumes, and we're going to get a whole bunch of Romanian, were they dancers?
Stuntmen.
Romanian stuntmen and women or just men?
I think all men.
All men. And we're going to costume these guys at, now the subspecies is supposed to be this big in the movie. So how are we going to do that? Well, in Romania, you know, you could do anything at that time. Things were cheap. So the idea is everywhere that the subspecies appeared, they would build oversized sets, 6 times scale. Now, I remember there was a note I once got, hey, this is costing a little more money. I thought, no, this is the greatest idea ever. Fine, build a throne that's, you know, 90 feet tall. Build this, build that, because you need to have that perspective. Okay. Then you tell the story.
So It was. I think it was because The Gate had come out around that time, and they used forced perspective guys in costumes. And so we were like, okay, that's the way to do it. So we had these costumes built, latex costumes, flesh colored.
Which were expensive, because those we had built in L.A.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, build us a dozen full body costumes. That was a lot of money.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So put them on the stuntman. A throne that was so tall you couldn't even climb up it. Bars of a cell, and then it came time to shoot some tests to see how it worked. So we got up on a big tower of scaffolding to shoot down on the subspecies. The stuntmen in Romania, stuntmen think it's good to drink a little bit before you do a sword fight or before you do anything. So they came out on set and were just overacting and so energetic and being the stunt people that they were.
Right.
And the minute they walked on the soundstage, the grime of 1,000 years of Romanian movies being shot adhered to their flesh-colored costumes.
Right.
And in a matter of 2 or 3 takes, they went from flesh-colored to totally charcoal black. We were like, okay, well, there's our test. Sent it to you to go, okay, that looks great, Ted. And immediately it was obvious to you and to everyone who saw it that that was just not the way to go about doing the subspecies.
Right. It was a little more involved in that because you shot some scenes. It wasn't just a test. We saw a couple
of
scenes.
Right, we did shoot scenes.
Two scenes where these little guys are running around dancing like, you know, at 78 RPMs. I thought, this is a disaster. These aren't subspecies at all. So we wound up shooting the movie. You wound up shooting this movie. I'll tell the end later what we did and how the subspecies came into being. And for those of you who are curious, on the Blu-ray, I'm not sure if we have this on streaming, I think we have those outtakes of the Romanian stunt people in costume,
worth
half drunk.
Yeah.
It's worth looking at because we had to, and we spent a lot of money. So anyway, you're supposed to be there, let's say, 4 weeks shooting the movie. Then what happened?
So we're there, supposed to be there for 4 weeks shooting the movie. It's turning from autumn to bitter cold winter. We're up in the mountains. We do our first week's worth of shooting. You saw the dailies and went, the hell? And pulled the plug on it for a week to sort things out. Brought in Adolfo Bartoli, who was a really great cinematographer from Italy that you had worked with, to meet with Vlad to maybe take over the movie.
Right.
I had to go to a meeting at Bufta Studios and basically defend Vlad from getting fired from the movie because he owned the crew and he was the one who was actually helping get the movie made.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the actors are going, wait a minute, we were supposed to be here 3 weeks. It's been 2 or 3 weeks now already. They're calling their agents going, get me out of this. Get me home. I want to get out of here. Everybody's crying, drinking bottle after bottle of wine every night, sweeping glasses off the tables, going, fuck you, Ted. And I'm taking the blame for all of this. Meanwhile, so we defend Vlad. Adolfo looks at me one day and goes, I don't want to come here. So Adolfo basically told Vlad how to use backlight and how to light it a little bit more Western style.
Yeah, a little bit more like the way we did our movies.
Right,
Mac
your
Allberg,
movies.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because Mac Allberg was like irreplaceable as a cinematographer.
Yeah,
his lighting was among the greatest.
Right.
So the actors are going crazy, crying every night.
And you would call me. And, you know, my job is always to say, Ted, it's going to be okay. Calm down. But I know what you were going through. Plus, it was bleak there for those actors. You know, every Creature Comfort, I mean, you know, other than Mufart Lar, the fucking
the wine. The dollar a bottle.
Dollar a bottle. It was bleak over there. But, you know, if they had finally gone home, which they could have gotten on a plane. Not easily, because it was even the airport was scary. But
and Albert was like, pulled the old, you'll never work in this town again.
Yeah,
your dad was really tough, a tough producer.
But anyway, so then what happened?
So then we got the movie back on track. We got Vlad to continue working. He kind of got the indications from Adolfo.
Right.
We started shooting again. Things were looking better.
Right.
But every day, the crew production meetings were basically sit down in the hotel, pour a tumbler full of vodka, start drinking until it just descended into madness. And Vlad would just look at me and go, oh, don't worry, Ted, be happy. Because don't worry, be happy, that Bobby McFerrin song was real popular in Romania at the time. The weather was kicking our ass. It was freezing cold. Every day we'd shoot less than we had anticipated shooting. It went on from, we're supposed to start shooting like at the beginning of October into November. We didn't wrap until almost Christmas time.
Yes. And, you know, again, luckily money was still okay and Paramount was happy. But I kept going back for advances because this was not the original budget. The Romanian side stayed almost the same, even though there were hard costs. But, you know, I was paying for the cast and the crew. I forget.
And whatever the hotels, it was. You must have been paying hotels.
Yes,
too,
I was paying for the hotels. So at the end of the day, I thought, all right, it's still not unreasonable. And the footage was looking fucking amazing. I mean, I thought this is the golden holy grail of the place to shoot. So anyway, you finally wrapped.
Finally wrapped. By the way, I'll just take this moment to let you know there is a daily diary that I wrote. At the very beginning, I went, I'm going to go insane if I don't write this down and turn it into comedy for myself. So I wrote this diary that covers from pre-production to the very last day when I got on the plane to leave. Available for sale. But for anyway, so what was the question?
Well, no. We wrapped, finally came back,
started editing.
Right.
And editing's always a matter of fixing all the mistakes that you made and how to patch over the little problems. But turned out really well.
Well, let me drop in one more bit of important information because it ties to something that we're going to be releasing next year, a movie called The Primevals. So Dave Allen, who... was my friend and started with me back in the days of Laser Blast and stop motion animation wizard. I had to call Dave one day and I said, you know, Dave, we made this movie called Subspecies. And I told everyone the same story. And they know the poster because the original piece of art that I came up with was actually really cool. Oh, I love it. I said, well, the bummer is that Ted went to Romania and he looked at it and Dave didn't laugh at anything. He actually laughed. I said, well, Dave, don't laugh too soon because we shot background plates of every set so that you can then create stop motion animation subspecies. And then yes and no and the budget and the thing. And so that was an extra expense. But he literally, I think, in many ways saved the day because, you know, Radu breaks his fingers off. They turn into subspecies. I mean, those little subspecies, even though they're not a huge part in the movie, are part of the magic of the movie. Yeah. So you came back. This is the punchline. You came back. You're editing the thing. It takes some months because Dave has to create these subspecies and stop motion is a fucking forever thing. And then the movie's finished and it did so well and I loved it so much and Paramount was happy. And then I went to you and what did I ask you to do?
Do subspecies 2 and 3 back to back.
In
Romania.
That's right.
The funny thing is at the end of subspecies 1, it was such a brutal and difficult experience.
Right.
On the last week of shooting, Laura Tate, who played Michelle in Subspecies 1, had a problem and left, leaving us with a week's more shooting to do with her. And we had to hire a young Romanian girl and cut her hair, beautiful hair off.
You would never know. It was actually really well done.
We covered it pretty well. But so at the end of it, I was like, God, fuck, I'm so glad to be home where I can buy food again and water and don't have to be around drunk actors all the time. But about a week after that, I was like, God, I sure did miss that experience. It was so interesting because when you're suffering so much and then you have dinner with some friends at night and get drunk and you just remember those shining moments of humanity. So when you said, hey, 2 and 3, I was like, there was a moment of, oh, fuck, are you kidding me? And then I'm like, oh, boy, yeah, I'll do it. I'd love to do it.
So, Agent Nicolau.
Yeah. So we did the script. It was like two movies, all as one big 180-page screenplay.
That's three movies today.
Went over there and scheduled it and shot it like in, that was 70 days of shooting.
That was a lot of days. That's 10 of our movies now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a magical experience. I'm not going to get into the whole Romania thing because that is a whole, I mean, and you'd be the best person. We have to have you back just to talk about Romania. And the arc from 1990, 91, all the way to when I finally sold the studio and got it kind of screwed out of it many years later in the year 2000. But during those 9 years, we shot a lot of movies there. I built a studio with Vlad and Juana. We probably made 130, 140 movies there. We made kids' movies there that you directed.
Yeah,
we made Dragon
movies.
World
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we made Primevals. We shot most of Primevals there, which is still in post-production and almost finished after 37 or 40, whatever
wow,
many years.
I can't wait to see it.
So the Romania story is worth talking about as a separate item because it's a lot of fun, crazy stuff. The early days are obviously probably the most bizarre with the drunk actors and the vodka. But on a positive note, somehow they were always able to find a big tin of beluga caviar. They traded something. I don't know what it was. Those days are long gone. So even though it took a while for the food to get good, I remember the Italians brought in the pasta. They had to make
it. Let me tell you. Food was such a problem. We were so sick of eating like soggy French fries and undercooked chicken that you went, don't worry. I got some Italian friends. We're going to have spaghetti night once
right.
a week, spaghetti
right.
night.
Right.
And so we were like, oh boy, spaghetti night. And it turned out to be, it started out great. Your Italian friends came and brought us some eggplant parmigiana.
Yeah,
and it was like unbelievable. Yeah. But spaghetti night gradually devolved to pasta with one box of tomato sauce poured on it.
Well, the Italians left, so the Romanians didn't know what to do.
Yeah, the Italians left, and the Romanians didn't know what to do. So we were like, well, here goes our spaghetti night, too.
Well, there's so many great stories about Romania, but we got to move forward.
Okay,
we got to get to Serbia, you know. So, okay, so after that, you know, you were involved with a number of movies kids' movies and Dragon World. And when did you do Bad Channels? Because that's a movie I want to talk about a little bit.
Bad Channels was
right. We shot that here.
Yeah. Bad Channels came. Okay, there was after Terror Vision, I was like, oh, no, I don't want to do another movie about something coming out of some media player. But then eventually you kind of hooked me into it somehow. When was that? That must have been 90.
It was
93, because 93 was Dragon World, so maybe it was before Dragon World, or was it after?
It may have been after.
After, okay. But you hooked me into it by the fact that, we're going to do some music videos in it, and so
MTV was exploding, that was becoming a thing.
And we got Martha...
Quinn.
Yes. ...to act in it.
Well, some of the older people watching this probably, Martha Quinn, if you're, I guess, under 30, the fuck is Martha Quinn? But she was one of the early MTV hosts. She was very popular.
Original VJ, yeah, VJ. Yeah. Yeah, so Anna Adolfo was going to shoot it,
right.
And so it turned out to be a really fun movie to make.
For those of you who haven't seen it, check it out, Bad Channels. Now, there's so many stories, again, for all these films, but... In Bad Channels, explain about the little people, because then I'll pick it up in the tubes.
Once again, it's like, can't do a movie with just normal human beings. There's got to be some little creatures.
Because the fucking poster was the character, and he had three glass jars, and in there were like a little hot chick and a guy and whatever it is. I mean, people get drawn into that.
Yeah, okay, so it was a good visual.
Yes, it was.
And so the alien who's come down and taken over this radio station is reaching out through the airwaves and... drawing beautiful women in and putting them in his bottle for God knows what nefarious purpose.
We don't explain that.
of regenerating his civilization and some
course.
Other planet.
So anyway, this is it's not like the driving story force or whatever. It's cool, these little chicks. Anyway, there's one of the girls, I forget her name. She was a wonderful, pretty girl actress. I somehow tried over the years to cross over and pull characters out of the past. So for instance, I pulled Sonny Carl Davis out of Terror Vision, and I put him in Trancers 2. He plays an orderly named Rabbit. And then many, many, many fucking decades later, when I made the first Evil Bong, there was a part for a delivery man who was delivering the package that was the Evil Bong. And I thought, may as well make that guy Rabbit. So it was Sonny 20 years later. He comes with the package, and we still had his little name tag, Rabbit. So I like doing that. So I thought, okay, I'm making a movie called Doll Man versus the Demonic Toys. And forget that story's another chapter, but it was Tim Thomerson playing Doll Man, and we had already released the original Doll Man, which did really well. Same era when you were doing Subspecies, we were making all these Full Moon movies. And separately, we made Demonic Toys, which also did real well. So I thought, let's make Doll Man versus Demonic Toys. This is way before Marvel started doing all this. This is early 90s. So I'm thinking, you know, the poor doll man, he needs a chick. You know, he needs a girl. So I thought, wait, let me pull one of the girls from your tube test tube. So this had to be like 80. I mean,
was
90. It, I'm sorry.
It
had
to 92 be 92 or
something like that. Because it was before I made Doll Man versus Demonic Toys. So we got her back, and she's wonderful. And so she played Doll Girl or Doll Chick or whatever we called her. And they hook up, and then they fight the Demonic Toys. There you go.
Yeah.
For those students of Full Moon weirdness.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. The Full Moon universe grows and grows.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. So, all right. So, bad channels. And then kind of Romania, more movies in Romania, right?
Kids movies. Then we did kids movies for a little while. Remote.
Yeah.
Dragon World.
Terrific movies.
Magic in the Mirror, Leaping Leprechauns.
Wow.
Like
a
series of really beautiful, fun kids movies, you know?
Those were. Then what happened? That we just lost a decade or something? Oh, yeah, business got shitty.
That gets us to, oh, then there was Subspecies 4, which was like kind of near the end of Full Moon.
It was the end,
Moon.
I think. Mm-hmm.
And Vampire Journals. Journals,
which
was
sort
of
the... seen it, terrific. I wouldn't say it's a spinoff, but it taps into the subspecies.
Yeah, it's a part of the subspecies family because Ash is related, as we'll learn in Subspecies Blood Rise.
We may as well jump to Subspecies Blood Rise at this point. That's why. No, there's no boredom. It's just we're told to do under an hour. I mean, we could keep talking, but, you know, there's a point where it's a drive time thing as well. Even though I'm not a big podcast person, although I'm happy I'm in that business. I actually wait to watch these on Full Moon Features. We put these up on YouTube now. They get up on Tubi, so I kind of like to see the visuals. But having said all that, yeah, there are many movies and adventures, and Romania ended, and we shot some bizarro films here and kids' movies. And then we've been wanting to, literally for 26 years, make Subspecies 5 or Subspecies Blood Rise. And the main reason why we couldn't make it is, A, of course, we were out of Romania, which would have been the perfect place. That ended poorly, especially for me. And then, you know, we didn't have the money. You know, the budget shrunk. I was making movies in 4 or 5 days. You know, it's a function of money as well. So 24 years later, there was a connection. There was a little more money. And we thought, let's make this movie in
Serbia.
No,
Albania.
Albania. So Agent Nicolau.
Yeah. Once again, basically, I wrote the script near the end of the Full Moon days.
Right.
A big, vast, epic
story.
Full
Moon never ended. But as things shrunk.
Near the end of the Paramount days.
Paramount days, yes.
Yes. And it was going to be a big, epic story of how Radu came to be the vampire that we love.
Right.
And for all those years, we sat on it and was like, nope, we can't do it until we can do it right. Can't do it until we can do it right. And finally, we could do it pretty right.
Right.
In Albania.
Right.
So I went to Albania, scouted locations.
This is maybe 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was like right before this. It was a
pandemic.
Summer before the pandemic, yeah. And saw some really good, not great, spectacular high castles like in Romania, but like squat kind of fortress castles.
Right.
But some good undergrounds, and it looked pretty good. But Justin Martel, who's like the kind of guy who puts together productions between the U.S. and Europe, kind of had a falling out there and decided that it wasn't going to be a good place.
Well, this was also on the eve of the pandemic. We were actually going to do
it.
We were going to do it. I remember we sent some money. Things were cooking. It was going to be February or March, and then pandemic happened, and we said, oh, fuck, here we go. No more Subspecies 5.
So then I spent the next 2 years in the pandemic kind of trimming down the script a little bit to make it more and more reasonable that we could actually shoot it on on a budget. And then as the pandemic wound down, they suggested, Justin and Seeger suggested Serbia because they had done some movies in Serbia.
They still are really good partners. You know, they did the connection, much like we had the connection years ago with Romania. We were spoiled. I mean, that's when, you know, the $1 Mufart Lar was a fucking great bottle of wine. But they found finally a great opportunity in Serbia, and as you said, they had some experience there already, and they're fans of the movies too, which is really important.
Yeah, and so they sent me photographs, and we kind of worked from photographs and from Zoom meetings with the production designer and the director of photography and the producer. And finally, it just came time to, okay, put up or shut up. Let's make this movie.
And we did it.
And we did it. And we got Anna Sove back to play Radu, Denise Duff as Michelle, but not as Michelle now, as another character.
Right.
And Kevin Spiritas, who wanted to be in the film and wanted a part in the film, and we found a part for him. And I went over there and spent some weeks casting Serbian actors because we needed...
Who are wonderful, by the way.
Yes, they're really great. We needed people who could speak English well enough that it wasn't going to be funny when they talked, and also who were good actors and looked the part. And after a number of weeks, we found some great people, got a great director of photography in Vladimir Ilyich. And
killer locations, too.
Great locations, really good locations. Went over there, prepped it in Belgrade, shot for a week or so in Belgrade, and then took off for the mountains in the south of the country.
You were there 2 months. I mean, this is
8 weeks.
And I would say for people who are subspecies fans, and I know people are really excited about this movie, this is our most ambitious film in 26 years.
In a really long time.
Pretty much in 20 plus years. And for people, again, who write letters, why don't you make a movie like this? Well, it's like, dudes, this is a function of money and budget, you know. As things get better and hopefully people support what we're doing and our streaming site, then...
Join up. Join up. Give Charlie some money so we can make some more movies.
But, I mean, let's face it. This streaming site is really awesome. I mean, every couple of weeks we're releasing something new. So in January, should be January, we hope. No?
I'd say February.
Oh, Jesus. Well, sometime early next year.
Early next year for sure.
For sure, yes. Subspecies Blood Rise is going to be coming out, and it's going to be terrific. And that will, I think, open the door, hopefully, to other cool things that we have up our sleeves.
I hope so, because we felt the pressure of this movie could not disappoint anybody, you know. And and we kind of approached every day with that. How can we make this as good as possible in the time that we have to shoot it? And there's never enough time to do whatever you want to do.
Especially if you're Ted Nicola.
If you're ambitious and want to do it. On a multi-bazillion dollar budget, there's never enough time to do what every day's work.
I'm so happy that you and I have been pals for all these years and that we've somehow managed now out of the rubble of life and business and the video business dying, which was good for a while for all of us, that we've managed to make this movie. It's in the can. Now you just have to do a lot of cutting and editing.
Yes, I'm editing right now.
Good.
Normally my son Alex would be the editor, but he's off on tour. So I set up myself in my wife's office and I'm like, took over the computer and I'm editing.
No later than February. Okay, that's fucking... October.
I'm hoping that I'll have a cut in December.
Yeah, but then we have to do the thing.
Post-production,
and the
music and all of that. Yeah.
We're going to do this again. Because there's a great story of the 8 or 9 years in Romania. We should get a few of the other key players, like David Dakota. We should get a few people who can tell the story, maybe four of us or three of us in this room, and really talk about Romania during all those years, because there are some really, really cool stories.
It was a great place to shoot movies in the time that we had to work
there. It was.
Really great crews, and... the food got better as years went
on. Well, now you can't afford it. That's why we went to fucking Serbia. You can't go to Romania.
Well, now the food is actually better than the food here in terms of the beef that you can buy.
Are you talking about Serbia now?
No, Romania.
It's all
organic, very organic.
Oh, whatever.
Okay, fuck Romania.
Yeah, but you can't get the beluga caviar anymore. Those days are like fish are gone.
And the dollar bottles of wine are probably $20 now.
All right, dude. Well, you know, I will be totally honest. If this wasn't like noonish or one on a Friday, I would so have a vodka martini with you right now.
Man. My stomach's growling anyway. But it has been a pleasure.
Awesome.
And, all these years have been a pleasure.
We keep trucking. And ciao. That's it for this week. Remember to follow The Freak Show for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from. And be sure to watch our video version of the show on Full Moon Features and Full Moon's Amazon Prime channel. See you dudes next time.